Welcome to the Metal Hammer podcast. I nearly said issue then, like an idiot. Episode 53. I'm Mo. I'm here with Elle. How's it going?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
It is a beautiful, breezy, very nearly summer morning, but it's not. We're only in February, but the sun's out. Everyone's happy. What a lovely time to be alive, eh? All that snow and misery seems like a long time ago already. Don't forget that the latest issue of Metal Hammer is out right now. It's one of the biggest issues we've done in months. It's celebrating 50 years of heavy metal. The albums, the bands, the stories that defined our world. We talked through the 50 greatest albums ever made, as chosen by our all-star panel. Loads of big names in there. We've got brand new interviews with people like Tony Iommi, members of Typo Negative, members of Mayhem, Tom G Warrior, metal legends all over the place, members of System of a Down we've got new interviews with. It's just wicked, and it comes with three Metallica beer mats and a free giant Iron Maiden poster. What more could you want? You literally won't find more metal anywhere this month.
I want it.
You've got it.
Oh.
Multiple copies. So yeah, go buy it right now. It's still out for, when's this going out? Out Thursday. It's still out for about a week or so, and then we'll be unveiling our brand new issue next week. So go out and get it while you still can, ladies and gents. Because once it's gone forever. Unless it's still on the website, in which case you might be able to buy it there.
So. But only just.
Only just. Loads of people cancelling dates this week. What's going on?
I don't know, you tell me.
Everyone's getting injured and fucked, basically.
Well, Ozzy is still a bit poorly, isn't he?
Yeah, he's got pneumonia.
Yeah.
Which is not great.
It's not great.
But he's apparently on the better side of it. He's come through the worst of it. But yeah. He has to kind of rest up for weeks, which means he's had to pull a ton of Australian dates, I think it is.
Yeah.
With Judas Priest as well. Poor Judas Priest.
I know,
basically had all their tours just fucking panned for their best album in a generation, basically. And they've got this big, one of the biggest and most metal tours they've ever done, and they've had to just kind of all sack it off for the foreseeable now.
I know. It'll come round though. It's just a shitty thing that's happened.
It is. And I gather that Judas Priest will still be playing at least one of the dates in Australia. I think I've got that right, but you can go to judaspriest.com or metalhammer.com, I should say. And find out the latest info on that.
Can we do a road trip?
Well, to Australia?
Yeah.
That's a long road trip. I would love to, but yeah, as you said, I think they said they're going to come back here in the UK for September or something, aren't they? So it'll be fine. Rest well, Oz, that's the important thing. We love you, man. Get the hell back on the road.
And that wasn't a no on the road trip, so...
Yeah, true. Yeah. Who knows? You're paying, I'm up for it.
He's driving.
Can I not drive? Well, I can, but I've got a licence, but I'm pretty sure it's out of date because I haven't used it for about 10 years now, so... Useless man. Bring Me the Horizon had to cancel their final small run of US dates. I think it was only a couple that they had to pull in the end because Ollie Sykes went and blew his voice.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
Was it something about one of his vocal cords was torn or something?
Yeesh.
Torn vocal cord? I remember reading
metal
it
and painful.
Thinking that just sounds horrible. And I think it's a case of if he did carry on trying to sing, then he would risk permanent damage.
That sucks. And a few people have pointed out that it's weird that he used to just do what, like... I think a lot of people forget just how good an extreme metal vocalist Ollie is as well. Like, his screams are fucking... nails, and when that's what Brimmy used to do, he went through all that without any major damage that I can remember. And now that he's doing more clean vocals, and he's gone and fucked it up, which is weird. Not fucked up, that's harsh, I'm not having a go at him, but it's just interesting. I don't know if that's because he's having to get used to singing more in a different way.
I'm just
making stuff up, really, just speculating.
When you go to the shows, you still find that he's missing words and sentences out, and that Jordan's doing a lot of vocals.
Yeah, sure.
It's still kind of not seeing the full thing, so I don't know.
Interesting. We will see. Maybe he tore it, telling everyone to pull their tampons out really hard.
Oh, I forgot about that. Pull your tampon out.
Who knows?
Totally forgot about that.
Get well, Ollie Sykes. Get well, Ozzy. We don't like to see, you know, metal mainstays and rock mainstays doing themselves a damage. The World Metal Congress. This is exciting.
Yeah, it's very cool.
This actually got announced, I think, early last week, maybe a little bit before that now, actually. So there's this big event happening for the very first time ever, and it's happening in London next month in Bethnal Green. So on March 22nd and 23rd, the World Metal Congress will be taking place. It's going to be a big look at the world of metal, covering all the big issues affecting our world today. There's going to be exclusive performances, there's going to be screenings of special films. It's actually put together by Melhammer Alumni, our former boss. I said it wrong, didn't I?
Alumni.
Fuck! Alumni.
No, Alumni.
Oh, it's like the 80th time I've said that
alumni.
Wrong.
Alumni.
Former Melhammer resident. Mr. Alexander Milas, the former editor-in-chief of Metal Hammer magazine, has put this together, and it looks like a fucking awesome event. So it's going to be, I think I've got this the right way around, March 22nd. It's going to be a day of debate and discussions. There's going to be panels starring various bigwigs from around the metal industry. There's people from Vice there. Danny Picard from BBC Radio 1 Rock Show is there. I think people from some broadsheets and all the rest of it. Metal Hammer's very own, Dom Lawson, Metal Hammer legend, is going to be there. One of our great veteran writers. He's going to be there as not just a very knowledgeable metal man, but also someone that has been around different territories around the world. He's been sent to Nepal, I think it is. No, Indonesia. That was you. Yeah, you went to Nepal, sorry. Yeah, Dom went into... He's been into Indonesia through a few times and checked out the metal scene there.
And has sung with Indonesian bands on stage.
He has, yeah. He's actually got up and sung with Indonesian heavyweights Burger Kill. So he's super, super knowledgeable about metal on the kind of global scale. So he's going to be there. That's all on March 22nd. Then on March 23rd, there's going to be live shows from Worm Rock from Singapore. They're a pretty big deal. And one of the best named bands ever from South Africa, Zombies Ain't My Girlfriend.
Yeah, we've had both on the Global Metal CDs on the front of
cover
as well. So very excited to hear those bands are going to come over and play.
Yeah, there's going to be screenings of metal documentaries from around the world as well, so you can get an exclusive insight into some of the real struggles that many people have in different territories to put metal bands together, to play metal, to play gigs, to kind of create metal communities. It's not easy. I mean, Elle's done, the lady sitting to my left, has done a lot of coverage on this kind of stuff in Metal Hammer, and we've done CDs with these guys, and we've done features with a lot of these bands that will be getting coverage at the World Metal Congress, and it's just great to see that they're getting more of a platform now to kind of make ignorant Westerners like me stand up and take notice, basically.
Yeah, there's so much going on out in the rest of the world, and we kind of get too focused on America and the UK when actually there's stuff happening all around the world, and so many people with so many interesting messages and different kinds of sometimes traditional music incorporated into their songs, and sometimes it's just straight up fucking good metal.
Yeah.
So
we've got something on a relatively uncharted territory for metal coming up in the next issue, I believe, which will be fun. So you can read about that next week.
Either the next one or the one after.
It's a rant, isn't it? Next week.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm right, aren't I?
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, come on. Good. This is what happens when you're juggling. You get a little insight there, and so we're normally juggling about five issues at once. Sometimes it's hard to know what's going on. But yes, definitely.
There is a very good feature about global metal.
Exactly.
Take that up.
So, we'll reveal a bit more about that next week. But in the meantime, head on to... I can't remember what the exact website is, but Google World Metal Congress or check out the website via metalhammer.com. And you can pick up tickets for it. It looks like an awesome event, and I'm going to be there because it's going to be cool. So come hang out and celebrate metal on the global scale. Hooray. Someone who's not been celebrating metal
nice.
And rock on the global scale.
Very nice.
Seamless. But having a bit of a whinge. I found this story hilarious, personally.
I've not read it. And this is the first I've heard of it.
Oh, really?
I mean, I've just kind of been a bit burrowed in work this week. As you might have noticed, Merlin.
Such a martyr. No, you have been. I can confirm.
So, yeah, I've not really read what's going on. So, Nikki Sixx has accused Kiss of ripping off Motley Crue.
Yeah.
I don't understand that. That's the wrong way around.
So, basically, Nikki Sixx has posted on social media a photo of himself. Did you go to the final Crue shows in London?
Yeah.
Right, so do you remember they
oh,
were
no,
on those
I
big
have seen
platform
this.
Crimes?
It's the crane.
Yeah, the crane.
Yeah. He said he was really upset because they'd stolen like a big stunt from their final show and their grave wasn't yet cold or something and Kiss had already gone in it. But it's a stage platform.
Yeah, it's just a rate of raising stage platform.
Yeah.
And granted, if you look at the two photos,
they're
it's a very, very similar mechanism.
Yeah.
But it's Kiss. They invented all of this shit.
Yeah.
Like they were breathing fire and flying through the air and going on great big rising steaming platforms decades before other bands were doing that stuff.
Even
I find
if
this amazing.
Use the exact same piece of equipment that they did, it's not exactly some kind of big imaginative stunt. It's allowing an audience member to be over the audience. And that's been done lots of times, whether it's on wires or platforms or runways into the crowd. It's not a new idea that you'd be a musician kind of going out over a crowd in some fashion. Even if they've used the same piece of equipment, it's just, why would you get upset about
exactly.
that?
Exactly. I mean, you know, don't get me wrong, Crew have done amazing things for kind of stagecraft as well. You know, Tommy Lee's drum coasters and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, totally.
You know, that Joey Jordison brought that into Slipknot and all the rest of it. But, I mean, also going at Gene Simmons over social media is a bold move, because Gene Simmons is not afraid to just get himself dirty in these kind of
conversations. He probably patented it like 10 years ago anyway.
Yeah, he blatantly did. Yeah, Crew forgot to patent it, so Gene jumped in there and did it first.
I don't know, that's pretty...
So funny that Nicky's causing this... It's almost like he's got a movie coming up to promote or something. He could do with some publicity.
I mean, why would you be so oversensitive about that? Unless you're genuinely oversensitive about your final shows and protective of what you did, and you feel like it's somebody coming onto your territory and trying to repeat what you did in your sort of sacred final hour.
Yeah.
But I don't... Would somebody like that really give a shit?
Maybe they would.
I don't know.
You just don't know, do you? Rock stars. I mean, I love Kiss and I love Motley Crue, and I'd actually say I'm a much bigger Motley Crue fan than I am Kiss, I suppose. So I'm not kind of getting a kick out of kicking Nicky Six out of the mouth. But
that's a tongue twister.
I just thought that was just weird. Of all the things to kind of pick up on and start having a go at.
Like, at the end of the day as well, they're both entertainment bands. You're not going to find anything in their lyrics that's deep and meaningful and musing on the depths of life and the human condition. It's, we make big songs and we have a big show.
I'm saying that about smoking in the boys' room.
You have massive songs and a massive show, and you go there and you entertain people, and that's what you do. You can't pretend it's some kind of highbrow effort, and that's fine. But come on. Just stop it. It's not very dignified, is it? Don't throw toys out of the pram. Just get on with your life.
Just get on with it, yeah, exactly. Yeah. But that said, I am fascinated to see... Did you see the trailer for The Dirt?
Yes.
Have you watched it yet? I thought it was very fluffy looking, for want of a better word.
I may be watching it this week, so...
Oh, the film?
Yes.
Ooh, interesting. Mm. Wow. I don't know. Will you be allowed to feedback yet?
I don't know.
NDA'd up to the balls.
Somebody... I'm not signed anything, but somebody might come and poke out my eyes or something, so I don't know.
Oh, that would be pretty savage. way to deal with that. I don't know, I'm interested in it, because I feel like we've talked about how The Dirt as a book feels like a bit out of its time now in the world we're in today, and... It was interesting to see the, you know, in the movie it kind of covers all the debauchery and stuff, and then it covers the Vince Neil car crash, and it seems to frame it in a way where it's like, this was a really hard moment for the band, but you know that it was something that affected a whole lot of other people and everything else. And it's, I don't know, I'm really interested to see how the whole thing's framed, to be honest.
All that context aside, it's a biographical film about people's lives, which is kind of insane in itself when you know what's in the movie. So whatever you think about what happened, it did happen, and so that's kind of just an interesting thing to look at regardless.
I would like to think it could have been offered up as an opportunity for an almost like an analysis of where
the
metal
culture
and rock was there, the culture and everything else. I don't know if it will, because as we've seen with things like Bohemian Rhapsody and the rest of it, a lot of times it is, like I said, it becomes a bit of a kind of fluffy kind of montage of what happens rather than
a kind of accurate portrayal
of certain elements, which you have to do because it's an entertainment movie.
Yeah, you wouldn't know
how
much analysis you can do in 2 hours. That's the thing.
Yeah, totally.
It's not a documentary.
Yeah, exactly.
Which you kind of would want to see in a way. You kind of would want to, maybe, I'm just speculating, you kind of maybe want to see a documentary about the making of the movie and how all those people felt about it.
Yeah,
it'd be
definitely.
Interesting, wouldn't it?
Because I wonder, again... I don't know how. I don't know how like Machine Gun Kelly is, but I'd be interested to know if the actors, for instance, involved in the movie had already read The Dirt, or if they had to go and read The Dirt afterwards, and then what they had to say about reading it for the first time, and then having to go and act out all this mad shit that happened. You know, fascinating times. But yeah, definitely looking forward to seeing it. As I said, love Motley Crue, so it'd be interesting to see how that all goes down.
We will see.
We will. We will. In the latest issue of Metal Hammer, which you can pick up right now, we always have the new noise section where we highlight all the best new bands you need to hear about immediately. And the one we've gone biggest on this month is A.A. Williams, who I thought it was worth just highlighting on here as well, really, because I think she's fucking awesome, and I think that new EP is one of the best things I've heard all year. If that EP was an album length, it would probably be my album of the year so far.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, she's fucking awesome. It's another Holy Raw band, obviously. Just seemed to just be monopolising the entire kind of new band scene at the moment. But it just seems like... And this could lead into something we're going to talk about later when we go back to the article Stephen Hill did recently. But there just seems to be this really interesting generation of, I don't want to say like female singer-songwriters, because that puts off a bit of a stupid impression. But this kind of like doom poppy, you know, I guess in the image of people like Chelsea Wolfe, Emma Ruth Rundle, all those kind of people. There's like all these really interesting artists coming out now and putting this really kind of like heavy but not heavy strain of doomy pop out there. Do you know what I mean?
What is she singing about?
That is a good question, and I'm going to have to say that you're going to have to read Jonathan Seltzer's excellent interview in the issue itself to find out, which I commissioned and read and fed back on, but it's been a while since I actually read it, so I can't remember now. But I think what A.A. Williams is talking about a lot of the time as well, which I find really interesting, is this idea of what heavy is and what you have to be considered heavy.
Yeah.
Because to me, the EP, which I think is self-titled, let me just check my notes here. Yeah, self-titled EP out now, be a holy roar. To me, it's a heavy, heavy album, but it's very much heavy. It's heavy thematically and it's heavy spiritually, and it's just got this certain vibe to it that makes it feel like this like really weighted piece of work. But you couldn't, you know, you'd be hard pressed to say it's heavier than, I don't know, a Suicide Silence song. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
but
to me
it has more gravitas than something like that.
It's the difference between bludgeoning and taking your time, I'm going to say. Something could kind of hit you over the face, or it can just ooze into your ears.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just, I just think it's wonderful. It's got all these different shades to it. It's all very slow, it's very pacey, it's very methodical. But she's got some really interesting things to say about, I guess, what it's almost like why we're, if you just listen to this for the first time with no prior knowledge, you might almost be like, why is this in Metal Hammer? This kind of stuff. But we're doing a lot of these kind of bands. Like I said, we do Chelsea Wolfe, Darker, who else did I say? Emma Ruth Rundle, Louise Lamont, who we did a big thing on a few months ago. There's all these really great artists that you could almost say, like, do they really belong in Metal Hammer's world? Do they really belong in the metal world? But I think they absolutely do, because they a lot of them have been booked for Roadburn.
Exactly, and they're not... We sort of mentioned the word pop earlier, you know, sort of death pop, gospel, death, doom, pop, whatever you want to call it. But it's not fluffy in any way at all, because, again, you sort of talked about the pace of the songs.
Death pop?
A lot of the songs are sort of slow, considered, textured, the lyrics are weighty, it sounds like something to be taken seriously, it sounds like something you might hear in a church, if a church was concerned with the dark side of life instead of the light side of life.
Yeah, definitely. Jonathan Seltzer has done an amazing job. We always have those little in short boxes that kind of just give you a rundown of each new band we cover. And he's as is often the case with Jonathan, he's just put
oh
it in
my
the most
gosh,
amazing
let me guess,
way.
Go on.
He says, it's a transformative folk and country-tinged fever dream laced with post-rock dynamics and unfurling just below your body's natural beat.
Brilliant.
It's just, yeah, and I can tell you that the music itself is even more beautiful than that little summary that he wrote.
I like the thing about, what was it, read that bit again, the body's natural...
It's unfurling just below your body's natural beat.
Yeah.
And I love that.
Which is a great phrase. Jonathan nailed it there. It is. It's that thing of like, almost feels like it's in time with the rhythms of your body, and it's sort of innate and primal and something you know, except that it's more slowed down and it kind of takes you out of yourself because of that, and it's slightly mismatched and you feel a bit like maybe heavy or a bit consumed by it or preoccupied with it. It is that slightly strange, ethereal... thing.
Definitely, and I think if you in this kind of sound is kind of developing in the various parts of the metal scene. I mean, if you loved that last Mercury album as much as we did, those kind of slower, more melodic segments on that album are the kind of thing you can find on this EP. So if you're into all that kind of stuff, and there's a lot of it out there, I think that this A.A. Williams EP is one of the best of the lot. It's out now via Holy Bore. Quite hard to find on Spotify. That's my only criticism of it. If you type in A.A. Williams on Spotify, there's a lot of random shit that comes up. But apart from that, it's really good. If you can only be bothered to check out one song, I'd say check out Control. That's my favourite on the album. It's really good. The EP, sorry. So yeah, that's really, 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 really great.
5 out of 5 from you.
10 out of 10 as we review on Metal Hammer. I hasted to remind
it's different you. On the website.
Well, I still don't know why that is. Should we take some reader questions?
Yeah, go on.
Yeah, go on then, you take one.
Aidan Gordon Freeman asks, with all of the changes in genres over the years, what do you guys think will be the next big movement in the metal scene? We talked about this just now.
Yeah, I think it's quite a big thing. Would you call it death pop or doom pop?
Something like that, I don't know.
Death pop, what should we call it? I think it's got a proper name that people have stamped
death
on
death gospel, but... some people say.
Yeah, death gospel, yeah.
Yeah.
I like death pop better, it sounds cooler. We're going to call it death pop.
Some of it's more gospely than other bits, so I don't know.
That's all right, you know. Some thrash bands are faster than others.
It's a broad church.
It is a broad church. So yeah, Emma Ruth Rundle, A.A. Williams, Louise Lemon,
Nicole Sabanay.
Nicole Sabanay, yeah, that's a great shout. All these kind of excellent artists.
Anna von Hauswolf,
yeah, God, there's loads, aren't there? This is this really kind of interesting movement of kind of doomy, deathy, death tinged, lumbering pop music. It's awesome, and we're all over it. So that's I don't know if that's going to be the next big thing, but I think it's the first time in a little while where you can kind of identify a sound and a group of bands that all subscribe to it.
Yeah.
I reckon.
We also talked about what we called Holy Rawcore, just a kind of generation of bands loosely linked by the label. You know, they're all kind of going to be a bit noisy, have their own personality in some way.
Yeah. Same as how in you know, Roadrunner in the 90s, Type O Negative don't sound like Sepultura, who don't sound like Machine Head, but they all just
linked by a kind of ethos.
Yeah, or just approach, being sick.
That generation was so good.
Yeah. Now I think Holy Roar very much propping up another. Anyway, we talked about loads the other podcast.
Yeah, I'd like to see a movement, I think I've talked about this before as well, like new metal that comes out and just blows up in the mainstream and just makes everything popular and encourages people to just check out a load of heavy music at the same time.
I too would back that, especially if it's new metal, again.
Well, you do see it coming out in other bands, doing like Shapes and
stuff. Totally. Yeah, I mean,
it's kind of hanging around. Cane Hill, although they went and did their acoustic thing recently.
I think even, those are quite... But those are quite like new metal-y bands a lot of the time, aren't they? I think you can even find like, you know, the grooves of Korn, the riffs of Slipknot, the production of Linkin Park. Like all over metal now.
Oh, Fever 333, Linkin Park all over.
Yeah, totally.
So, they left their fingerprints.
You know, Bring Me the Horizon just got a number one album, and Chester Bennington was a huge influence on it, or at least kind of... you know when he did like his halfway between cleans and screaming vocals on Sepultura?
Yeah.
Like that kind of stuff, like the sleepwalking stuff.
I'd also like to just see something completely random, like, I don't know, something based on something really visual or a scene that comes out of another country where, like we were talking about, like Indonesia or... You know, there's that Mongolian band, The Who, at the moment, H, U. They've done a song called Wolf Totem, which you can find... Spotify, and I was like, why can't I find any more music? And it turns out they've only released 2 singles. They've got a debut album coming out this year, and we've covered Mongolian folk metal before in bands like Tenga Cavalry, but this band have got this kind of like sort of groove and a slightly classic metal sound, but then massive like throat singing bits and sort of a primal kind of makes you think of mountains sort of beat. So stuff like that as well, you kind of think, oh well, there'd just be a massive explosion of Mongolian metal, and is throat singing going to become a massive thing? I don't know, you never know, do you? But I'd kind of like to see that. I'd like to see like Mongolian throat singing metal take over the O2 Arena.
It's a big shout.
I'd love to see that. Though. We're talking fantasy here.
Right, we're talking
fantasy metal movements.
And that's why, more evidence of why Elle's probably the foremost expert on global metal in the UK at the moment. That was Mongolian throat metal. There you go.
The Who.
Can't really.
Look
can't
at
really
the video on YouTube if you want to see that.
Yeah, go check them out. The Who. That's another.
I'm sure we'll do something in the Magdown online.
That's another cool shout for this podcast. Michael Jolly says, saw a post somewhere moaning about Enter Shikari releasing a new live album and how it's just a way to make more money. Do you think live albums are a good thing or just shitty cash grabs?
That's really hard to say. Shitty
it was.
Cash
I nearly fucked it up.
I thought you were going to say crabs. Shitty cash crabs.
Crab cash.
Crab cash. I like a live album that comes with a free crab.
I'm glad you stopped it there. what do you think? A live album's a good thing or just shitty cash grabs?
Shitty cash grabs.
I need to say that slowly.
Me, personally, it completely depends on the band. If we're talking about Slipknot doing Download, that live album, what's that called?
Hell. Antennas to Hell?
No, it's not called that. Oh, yeah. No,
was
maybe
that the greatest hits one?
I thought you said And Send Us to Hell. You said Antennas to Hell.
Yeah.
I think the Download one's got a different name, but I can't remember. So, that's really good. That has just got like spit and fire and
right. I can say Antennas to Hell is the special is the greatest hits that they release, and it comes with Live at Download 2009.
But yeah, you can just feel the intensity and the spit and the like of Corey's voice and like that's the noise I'm gonna make. Yeah. That feels really good, and something like the Rammstein.
And it was Paris. A legendary gig.
It was, yeah.
It was like a seminal gig.
And something like the Rammstein Paris live album, which is really good as well, which came with the Jonas Acklund directed film.
I was going to say, are we counting like DVDs and visual stuff in this? I guess we do, don't we?
Whatever you like, Merlin.
Sure.
But that's got a soundtrack as well. So stuff like that I'm really into, where it's a band that I really like. They've got a good show and you can tell that they were on form when they made it, and it sounds really exciting and you get a bit fired up by it. But other bands sometimes just put out a couple of live tracks on an album or a live album, and I'm like, I don't really care, I just want to listen to the studio versions. Probably just depends what kind of a fan you are. If you're a mega fan, you're going to get excited about it. If you're not, then
yeah, I completely agree. What I do think is that the idea that someone's got pissed off about, I mean, I'm not a big Enter Shikari fan, to be honest, but they're one of the most hardworking, kind of vital English bands that have come along in the last 15 years. They've been so important to the UK scene. They've done everything off their own backs. They've done so much kind of off a DIY ethic and independence and all the rest of it. And the idea that someone's angry because Enter Shikari wants to make money, wankers, how dare you?
How dare you eat?
How dare you?
And pay your bills.
I've never paid for a song of yours in my life, but I'm going to fucking moan because you're putting out a live album that people might buy. Buying music? Are you sick? Who do you think you are, you pigs?
Yeah,
you
exactly.
Pigs. Paying for music, you cunts.
Cash crabs.
Cash crabs. I find that absolutely bizarre. Why would someone have a problem with someone with a band wanting to make money? No one's making money out of music anymore. If they can find a way to make some money out of music, releasing an album that someone wants to then go and buy, who could possibly have a problem with that? I don't understand.
I love Enter Shikari as well, I'll say that. And their show, again, is one of those bands, like the ones I just mentioned, where they do a fantastic show. Not just production-wise, but sound-wise. I was at the show at Alexandra Palace where they had, what did they call it? They had sound everywhere.
The sound system. Shikari sound system.
No, that's the DJ
thing. Oh, that's the DJ thing, isn't it?
Sorry. No, it was. They called it, like, not surround sound, but something. Help me again. Help me, Merlin. You're my only hope.
I don't know. You're the fan.
I was there.
Right.
It was sound all around the room, basically. So you're just, it's like you were in a speaker. And they managed to do that at Alexandra Palace, which is no mean feat. And again, I would enjoy listening to Enter Shikari live stuff because they have that fire, they have that excitement. They want to be there, they want to do a show, and a lot of their energy comes from being on stage. They have always been like that. So, I'm in on that.
Yeah, and like, again, like I was just trying to find the name of that album. But
it's not an album, they just did the gig at Ali Pali.
They released it as an album
sound.
As well, it's right here.
Oh, fine.
Stop denying my facts. But yeah, just looking at Shikari's thing, and you know, Sorry You're Not a Winner is still their biggest song on Spotify. It's got 11 million streams,
so
which is
weird.
Quite a lot.
That's still
all
their
other
song.
Stuff.
I guess
here.
It's been around longest.
Yeah, exactly. But and it's also got that kind of nostalgia trip for people now. But all this other stuff on here, I don't know if it's just because it's the more recent stuff, but you know, you're dealing in like low millions for a band. And while that might seem like a lot. You know, a song getting 2 million streams is awesome, especially when it's a legitimate alternative rock band. That's not making them a lot of money. Like, that's not in itself going to be a bit, means they're suddenly a big band that can just sit on their laurels and just, you know, watch the cash roll in. And if Enter Shikari want to release a live album every 2 years, because it gives them a bit of extra money to then put back into what I imagine is a very expensive live show and all the rest of it, fair fucking play to them.
It's very cool.
Iron Maiden put a live album out, at least one live album out on every single album cycle they do. And I love it because I like being able to have different Maiden set lists available to me that I can listen to that also have that live element to them. You know, the Book of Souls one, I love that album, or certainly most of it. And so I liked hearing a set that started with If Eternity Should Fail, but then also having, like, you know, Wrathchild and 2 Minutes to Midnight and the rest of them kind of thrown in there as well. I like having that option to pick those up. So I'm cool with it. I don't pick up every single live album that a band does, and I probably, again, Maiden are the only one that comes to mind of bands that I listen to live albums of all the time. But
I think if you're moaning,
just making them some money, it's fine. Bands don't make money anymore from their conventional music means, for the most part. So just,
I think if you're moaning, it's not for you. And if you're a fan, yeah, then you want it, and that's, they're doing it for that. So
stop moaning.
Yeah, and also free crabs with every album.
yeah. Kill crabs and just stick in an album for Elle. That's what she wants.
Not dead ones.
Three dead crabs.
No. Ben Wilmot asks, off the back of the article Stephen Hill published,
speaking of moaning,
Metal Hammer, around increasingly prevalent female vocals in up-and-coming bands, were you disheartened by the sort of comments appearing in your delightful Facebook page? Do you think this is reflective of our community in general, or just loudmouth grebos pissing in the wind?
Wow.
Loudmouth grebos pissing in the wind. That's quite poetic.
We kind of covered this a little bit last week.
Yeah, we did.
Stephen Hill put up a piece about, as it says, increasing number of female artists that are kind of, I guess it's not just that they're here, it's that they're making their voices heard and bringing us a perspective that metal hasn't really focused around before.
What is funny is, I naively thought, in the back of my mind, if there's any criticism to this piece, it's probably, why are you writing a piece about women in metal when women in metal have been around a long time and you're kind of singling them out for something, which we were very mindful of when we were putting together an issue we did last January, which was celebrating women in rock.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on the one hand, we were like, maybe it's a bad idea to just focus on women because you're sort of othering them. And on the other hand, we're like, well, actually, there's fucking loads of amazing music being made by women and we want to celebrate it. And in that magazine, we just did loads of good features that happened to be about bands that had female musicians in them. It wasn't kind of a, oh, look at these women. It was, this is all the cool stuff going on, and you might not even notice, but there's, you know, some cool stuff happening with women in metal. And so Stephen published this, and actually it wasn't about that. It was just people kind of being quite misogynistic towards women and a bit sexist, and saying,
not even a bit sexist in some,
yeah, instances. Just downright, some of the stuff was like grim. Some of the comments were actually grim, and some of them were a bit more gentle, but kind of said, hey, you know, women haven't been oppressed, you're kind of making this up. And, you know, the fact is that it has been kind of harder for women in the whole of life in general.
Yeah, deal with so, it's true. Not women, people critiquing that point.
You know, across the board, I think we can all agree in this day and age that there are certain things that have been difficult if you're a woman that you just have to kind of navigate, and it's harder for some women than others, etc., etc. And this kind of says, hey, in this day and age, isn't it cool that actually there are some female vocalists or female musicians who are making noise about some of the issues that affect women, or just life issues, and having a platform to do that, and isn't that good?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's kind of all
it
says.
It wasn't
actually
even supposed to be, I mean, I don't like it when people say political, because I don't really understand why anyone would have an issue with, you know, equality and whatever. We won't go down that road. But it wasn't political and moral point scoring to start with. It wasn't like a politicised article.
He was just going, I'm excited about this because more people are having a voice and more people are talking about things that are important. You know, we were talking about Motley Crue and Kiss earlier being an entertainment factory. And they're great bands for entertainment. But then, you know, sometimes maybe you want something else and you are angry about some of the things Larissa's angry about from Fenton Prison. You know, she's talking about all kinds of things like what happens in a rape trial or, you know, forced pregnancy, all kinds of things. And maybe you want to be angry about that. And
neither of which are things that have covered in metal very much,
you know,
generally.
And that's interesting. So that's all he was saying. He's saying, it's interesting and I'm interested in this. And everybody piled on.
Yeah, exactly. And he's also saying, you know, he's kind of holding his hands up and going, as a man, I've not really thought about or probably seeked out or made an effort to look at these kind of points of view via the music I listened to before. If you've got Serena from Svalbard talking about slut-shaming, I mean, that's just a totally unheard of topic to be covered in the metal scene, really, on a wide scale. And Steve was basically just going, I'm a bloke and I've not really thought about this, and this is opening my eyes to stuff that it wasn't in a way, and that's cool. And that was it, really.
Yeah.
Like you said, there's not much, you didn't see that much kind of maneuvering for people to get angry about it.
He just kind of went, I like these bands and that's cool. And it's a bit like,
yeah, that's it, really.
You could come along and go, yeah, maybe you should have, you know, actually taken notice of some of these societal issues before, and maybe you should have listened to more women in metal before. You could say that if you wanted to, but at the end of the day, he's kind of coming forward and saying, I'm listening to this now and this is what I think.
Yeah, and
basically, I don't think it was meant to be as insane as everybody thought it was meant to be.
No, and you could define the best evidence of people of where the internet is at nowadays is all these people that came steaming in, going, "Oh, you don't even mention Arch Enemy then, or you don't even mention Ella Ruth Rundle then." It's like they're in the piece, dickhead. Read it. It's just
that's a bit weird,
it's
isn't
so
it?
Odd.
It's an easy subject for people to pile on top of, I guess, but. At the end of the day, it was not anything really controversial, so
I guess we
kind of
really
went
answered.
Off a bit for what it was.
Yeah, and we haven't really answered Ben's question, I've honestly.
Were
we disheartened? Were you disheartened by the sorts of comments appearing in your delightful Facebook page?
Yeah, I mean, on the one hand, you kind of think, well, you know, we have people on our Facebook page who just go there to get off on causing trouble, to just post memes and say bullshit because they enjoy it and they know they can. So you kind of know those people exist, but. Yeah, it's a little disheartening, isn't it, to see so many in one place? But then it was very heartening to see people come back and offer counter-criticism to what they were saying. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing, I always say, it's the people who talk bullshit are a vocal minority, and often people who would take the opposing view won't bother to comment or engage with it. Or some people will be passionate and they will engage with it. But it's a vocal minority usually talking shit, and I think that's just kind of, again, reflective of society at large. There's a lot of people out there who want to talk shit. There's a lot of people who want to not.
Yeah.
So, you know, society's got its shitty bits. The metal community's got its shitty bits. And hopefully, at some point, we can all be nice to each other.
That'd
which
be
I've
nice.
Said before, yeah.
I was talking to... this is a name drop, but there's a reason to it. I was talking to Tobias Forge from Ghost the other week. About how people just don't seem to understand that I'm not saying that if you've got an opinion that something's bad or that you disagree with it, you shouldn't feel free to air it, even if it's ridiculous in some cases. But if you kind of just spit your dummy out and piss all over your keyboard in anger and comment and just keep commenting and commenting and commenting on the Facebook post that has made you angry, I still don't think people understand that you're just bringing attention to it. Like, Steve's piece ended up being the most read thing on our website that week, which is great because it was a good piece and it was done in the name of positivity. But I can't help but feel a lot of that is because of people trying to shut it down and censor it, which is kind of ironic, really.
Yeah, you do draw more attention to it.
And the reason I was talking to Tobias Forge about that is because he was making parallels with the way Ghost have got traction. And the reason I say that now is because you've... hear more about that very soon, starting next week.
Also,
hint,
really,
hint, hint.
I don't want to sit next to you anymore if you start pissing on your keyboard.
Well,
I'm not here for this.
I'm not the kind of person that gets angry about an article about women in bands, so it's very unlikely, to be honest.
You're on your keyboard.
I'm aware. I just use quite a good point, an important point to just shamelessly plug something we're working on. But you know, I'm a cynical hack, so there we go.
Aww.
More of that next week. Richard has asked. Bit late asking this. Yeah, you are late. It's like February 22nd or whatever it is now. What would be your picks for a top three romantic metal records of all time? He's given us rules as well. He's not fucking about.
Oh.
Half of the tracks must be about love, heartbreak, longing.
Merlin warned me about this question, but I've not prepared.
I did.
But there is one that comes to mind in the moment. Him.
Oh! That's not fair. I thought of that ages ago.
Well, I've just thought about it now. Love Metal.
That's what. Look, I've got it written right here. Proof. Love Metal. It's even called Love Metal.
Which is a double meaning. Like, Love Metal, the genre that he invented, and a command to love metal.
Love Metal. A command we can all agree with.
I love that record. It came out.
Yeah, me too. Still my favourite him album.
It came out, and I just had a CD of it because, you know, old times. And I would just put the CD on repeat. It was brilliant. And you can really soak in that one, I think, like a nice bath.
Like a lovely bath.
Like a metal bath full of delicious soap suds.
So many tunes on it as well. Buried Alive by Love, Funeral of Hearts.
Funeral of Hearts is so good.
Sweet Pandemonium, Soul on Fire. I love that tune.
Sweet Pandemonium.
The Sacrament, of course.
The Sacrament is you.
The Sacrament is you. I love how like so many of his songs are like, how many of him's things take like something savage and something really lovey-dovey and just stick it together? It's like, Buried Alive by Love, The Funeral of Hearts.
It's a bit like that Bill Bailey.
Razor Blade Romance.
It's a bit like that Bill Bailey sketch where he talks about Slayer.
Fortress and of Tears. Relentless.
Help, you've broken me. Sorry. Fortress of Tears, brilliant.
Yeah, it's mad, isn't it?
Yeah.
I can't think of any others behind that, though.
But it's like the Bill Bailey sketch where he talks about
Vampire Heart. Heart. Sorry, go on, pop your bone thing.
Yeah, where he talks about the sketch and he talks about Slayer and how they come in and go, hello, we're Slayer. This is. And then, you know, they go into the riff.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, a bit like that.
It was like lovely lads.
Oh,
he just gets lazy near the end. Dark light.
Why hasn't someone done one of those hymn name generators of different songs where it mixes up all the things and you get your own one?
I know. Oh, he switched it the other way around for this one. Venus Doom. Fucking hilarious. Anyway, so I can't think of another one. We said yesterday Typo Negative, yeah, but if you actually look at their song titles and stuff, it's not really.
There's good songs though. Like, I think, again, because Typo Negative in the current issue, we talked about Black Number One. I love that song. And it's not so much like, you know, a romantic song, but it's affectionate.
It's a sexy song, isn't
it's
it?
It's affectionate.
They're a sexy band.
It's an affectionate song because he's sort of singing about how she's a massive goth. And I love the line, loving you was like loving the dead. It was brilliant.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's a lot of stuff in there that he was quite, you know, romantic in his lyrics. Realist, gothic, romantic lyrics.
I can only think
and he wrote a lot about relationships because he felt like he was fucked over a few times, so that kind of came out in the lyrics, didn't it?
He was, yeah. He has a lot
what
of...
What else?
I mean, I don't know. With metal, it's kind of like romantic metal. There's not a lot of that. Like I said, there's kind of like sexy metal bands, like people find Marilyn Manson sexy and Psycho Negative and...
I liked Placebo, things like Change Your Taste in Men. Tasteable, just Taste in Men.
Not really metal.
It's not
sorry
metal.
To meet that guy.
It's not, but...
Yeah, I don't know, really. Please come on the Facebook page, facebook.com/metalhammerreaders, and suggest some romantic
loads.
Metal for us.
There's got to be loads, I've just not thought about it.
But it's got to be thematically romantic, it can't just sound nice.
Yeah, about love,
you don't just want some goth band that they're singing about graves and shit. Like,
about
it's got to
love,
be romantic.
Heartbreak, longing, etc. There's got to be more. I definitely
I can
feel
think
like
of songs,
I
but I can't think of albums.
This. Do some more songs, wife, I think.
Heart-Shaped Glasses from Marilyn Manson.
Yeah.
Don't
break
my
heart,
I won't break your
heart-shaped
glasses. That's a love song,
that
isn't
was
it?
Vulnerable.
Yeah, that's Vulnerable Maz. Dieter dumped him and he felt sad. That's what happened there.
I like Metallica, Nothing Else Matters. A lot of people have that at their weddings.
That's a lovely song.
Yeah.
Classic song. Yeah, I can only. It's only just individual ones, really. You know?
So Danzig.
Really? Yeah? I guess. Maybe. I don't know. I guess if you kind of think about all the kind of mid to late noughties, earnest, kind of whiny metalcore bands, the Vans Warped metalcore bands generation, a lot of them were probably singing about girlfriends and what else. Whatever else.
Oh, what metal
you broke up with me.
Old Architects were about relationships?
A little bit of that. I want to say Amity Affliction do a bit of that. I know they do a lot of stuff about mental health and stuff as well, but they've got a song called This Could Be Heartbreak, I think it's called. Will you miss me when I'm gone? Oh, but again, I don't know if that's about love, actually. I might have fucked that up. Ignore Me.
Yeah, that's not, I don't think.
No, I think that might be about...
That's about darkness, stuff. Yeah.
So, for 10 that I didn't say that, I was undermining a much more serious song. But yeah, I think they do have some stuff that goes into that. I'm not too sure. I don't know. This is all just going to prove that I don't know shit about romantic metal. So once again, go on our Facebook page at .com/... Mahama readers, and please tell us some romantic
metal. There's got to be more. I feel like I'm failing at this.
Well, I think we've got to move on.
Oh, fine. Richard asks, a bit late asking this.
Just done that.
Oh, sorry.
Get over the romantic metal. Move on.
Oh,
come on.
So you're going to make me say Tim Thunderbolt Martin?
Yeah.
Is that a real name? Tim Thunderbolt Martha asks, why are some big bands such as ZZ Top, Gojira, Tenacious D and Alice in Chains doing the European festival circuit but doing their own shows in the UK?
Well, I don't know.
We'd have to ask them, wouldn't we? I don't know, I guess.
Well, there's not enough slots to go around all the time, and sometimes it just suits a band more for their touring cycle to do their own stuff. I mean, all I will say is that not all the festivals have announced all their lineups yet, so you might see some people dot about. Glastonbury haven't announced their lineup yet, and I saw ZZ Top at Glastonbury about 5 years ago, so they could do Glastonbury again, I guess. I think ZZ Top might be doing a festival in the UK.
I don't know.
Oh, fill some air while I look this up.
I'm excited about the festival season. It's going to be good. Big bands, ZZ Top, Gojira, Tenacious D and Alice in Chains. Yeah, I don't know. It's all... You never really know what goes on, do you? There's always festivals making various offers, bands seeing what routes they're going to take around places. Some bands might just prefer to do their own shows. You've got the massive Rammstein show coming up this year. Presumably they wanted to do just an all-out big Rammstein show rather than be on a festival.
Metallica as well have done that.
Yeah, Metallica have done that. So traditionally those bands you would have seen as headliners, but they're just doing their own thing, I guess, because they can.
Oh, yeah, I think maybe I'm getting mixed up with last year. I thought ZZ Top did like Ramblin' Man or one of those kind of festivals. But yeah, they're doing Wembley Arena on July 12th. But yeah, I actually made a joke on Twitter the other week that I noticed that Gojira's UK dates are right around Glastonbury. So I know Glastonbury have been booking heavier bands now. I saw Horror there last time I went, and Napalm Death smashed it last time there at Glastonbury. And obviously we've seen Metallica headline a few years ago. We've seen Bring Me the Horizon play. Wouldn't it be fucking hilarious if they booked Gojira to play Glastonbury?
Yeah, it'd be so cool.
I say hilarious. It would actually be amazing.
Yeah.
I would be the front row and centre. Seems impossible that could happen, but who knows? Tenacious D, I reckon, could do Glastow.
Yeah.
I know we're talking about a different conversation now, but...
correct me if I'm wrong. I think they're playing like 2 days at the O2 or something, aren't they? They're doing something crazy big.
Why?
I might have got this wrong.
Who's
quick.
Still going to I'm see
gonna,
this band?
I'm going to Google it. This is the podcast of Googling.
Man. Yeah, for Tenacious D could do Glastonbury. Could Alice in Chains do Glastonbury?
Yeah,
they're actually more like have
more crossover with the kind of people that would go. Like
they
people
do.
Would be more amiable, I'm sure, to that sound, even if they didn't in the band.
Yeah, I don't know, but you know, I've lost my track of thought now. Yeah, Earache are behind a lot of the heavy bands that get booked for Glastonbury now. Don't show me something and laugh at it, because then no one's going to know what that is.
I just went on the Tenacious D website and there's a picture of Jack and Kyle playing guitars, and between them there's a two-headed dog, and it's like my new favourite thing.
Good.
Fine. I like it. Oh, there's an alien!
I don't care.
I'm won over.
Stop showing... Stop talking about stuff that people can't see out.
There's an alien. Is it a pterodactyl?
Stop talking about stuff people can't see. We're on the fucking podcast. What are you doing?
I've just described a two-headed dog.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that's great for them. Aren't they hilarious?
Yeah, they're doing Wembley. They're doing 2 dates at Wembley Arena.
June
the 1st and the 2nd.
Incredible.
That's crazy, isn't it?
Incredible for a band with 3 good songs.
But yeah, so maybe we'll see some stuff at Glastonbury. Earache, they don't book a ton of Earache bands, but Earache are involved in a stage at Glastonbury. Stop showing me the two-headed dog, Elle.
I want it so badly.
So I'm hoping, with no inside knowledge, I have to admit, that we'll get to see some heavy bands at Glastonbury. And yeah, as I said, because you are in country around that time, so book them, Emily Evers. That would be incredible. And actually, Gajira, they did like a Lollapalooza festival or something in the States, didn't they? Or a BAM, what's it called? I can't remember. They've done it, they're like on a really unusual festival, but it's got like zero other metal bands on it in the States. So you never know what could happen. I don't think it's Coachella.
I don't remember.
No, it's definitely not Coachella. Anyway, we're rambling. But my point is, you don't know. There's lots of reasons bands don't do festivals and they do their own shit instead. But I hope we'll get a sprinkling of metal bands at Glastonbury again this year, because I thought that was great to see that last time.
Yeah, I think
out.
So too.
So we'll see what happens.
Alex Pike asks, any thoughts on Architects pulling out of Jira On Air 2019 due to the headline mix-up? Do you want to fill us in on that, Merlin?
So this is a weird one. So Jira On Air is a, I think, Dutch festival. Let me double check that. Their website address is, it's Holland. It's in Holland. So it's a Dutch festival in Holland at the end of June. So Architects are basically booked to be a quote-unquote headliner. And from what I can gather from what the band have said and what the festival have then come out and said, they were basically booked as a headliner. They were agreed to be billed as such on the poster. And I don't actually know if this is because of Parkway Drive, because it's not been confirmed, but I presume it's Parkway Drive, because what's basically happened is Parkway Drive have since been added as another headliner, except on the festival bill, Parkway Drive are on top, and they've got their big logo on there and stuff, and then under that, you can see Sum 41 and Architects in kind of regular type. They've not been given their own fonts and all the rest of it. So Architects have pulled out, basically citing that, you know, they've been kind of undermined as far as the billing on the poster goes. They were promised a headliner slot. As far as I can work out, they were still due to play a headliner slot, but the posters basically made it look like Parkway Drive are the big headliner, and then you kind of got these other two headliners, but they're not quite as much of a headliner as Parkway Drive because they're not as high up on the poster. And so Architects have pulled out, and they released a statement about that. Jira On Air replied with their own statement, and the internet has opinions. Do you, Elle?
Why do I have to have a take?
If you don't want to.
I just think it's a shame, isn't it? It sounds like there was a bit of a fuck-up somewhere down the line, you know, and people's expectations weren't met, and now it's kind of all public, and people who wanted to go and see them at the festival and won't be able to. Obviously, it's just an announcement, so people weren't like looking forward to it as such. But that's a shame for people who can't see them. It's a shame for the band not being able to play, or feeling like they can't play the festival anymore. Just seems like somewhere along the line something went a little bit wrong, and now it's resulted in something that's a shame for everybody. That's all I can really say about it.
I think that is a balanced and reasonable hot take. I think the same. I do think that people that are kind of laying into Architects about it, I get that people are probably disappointed, especially if you booked a ticket for them. At the same time, if you feel that someone's made an agreement with you and they're not living up to that agreement, again, I'm not saying that's the case, but that seems to be what Architects are saying, then you kind of have to, you know, there are times when you have to kind of stand up for yourself. And while it might seem petty to some people to pull out because of where your name is on the bill, that kind of projection can make a really big difference to a lot of bands, you know? But again, don't know if that's exactly the case, but it seems to be what it's all about.
Who knows?
You can go and read their statements and make your minds up for yourselves, basically. Yeah. So do that.
Do that, eh?
That's it for this week. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget to pick up the 50 Years of Metal Spectacular that is on the shelves as we speak right now. You've only got another week to get it on newsstands in the UK. We'll be back next week. I'm going to see Garl on Monday.
That's cool.
He's got his solo project going on at the moment. He's just about to release the first album under that name. Also supported by Tribulation, so that's going to be a gig. So I'll be talking about that next week. And we'll be back with all the latest news and reviews from the world of heavy metal. See you then.
Bye.
Goodbye, everybody. Summer's nearly here. Well, not really. Spring's
Thank
nearly.
Fuck
Spring's
that.
Nearly here. Hooray.